Griffiths again. He scored again! Sensational! Lightning strikes twice!
Good play by Gemland again.
3-1! James McFadden scores for Scotland! France are stunned and Scotland lead in Paris!
Hello and welcome to the Pure Football Podcast, the unbiased Scottish voice giving you in-depth insight from the local park to the World Cup. My name is Owen Brown and with me today is, of course, Gavin Miller. Gavin, how are you?
Yeah, really good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. It's been quite the week since our last podcast. Scotland are going to the Euros, of course, our first major men's international football tournament for over 20 years. And in addition to that, it's in our own hands to win our Nations League Group 2 this Wednesday and reap the rewards of an allegedly better route towards other international competitions in the future, tempered somewhat by the prospect of getting a doing from the European boys. of course, today's podcast is going to have a bit of a Scottish flavour. We kind of expect that you've had your fill of analysis of the Serbia game, but there may be some little sprinklings of reactions from some of the Pure Football team throughout the podcast about that victory. But we're going to talk about Sunday's Nations League match against Slovakia first, which was, of course, a 1-0 loss. After that, we're going to move on to discuss Scotland's under-21s, who are on the brink of qualification for the Euros as well, with their final group match this Tuesday. Hopefully you're listening to us before that takes place at 4 p.m. And finally, we'll take things back domestic by talking about a few players we're excited to watch in Scottish club football once this international break, which of course includes that final Nations League match against Israel, is concluded. So yeah, let's get straight into it, Gavin. Slovakia versus Scotland on Sunday, and I guess the starting thing to talk about is the lineups, specifically Scotland's lineup. What did you think of the team selection?
There was a few surprises for me, so I guess a couple of individuals that I felt maybe weren't the right players to start, and I didn't particularly get. So I guess the obvious one for me was Craig Gordon. I haven't been overly enamoured by his recall to the national team in the first place. So the fact that he came in was a bit of a shock to me. I was worried about what our defence was going to look like, and I just didn't quite see how that group was going to fit together. I was worried about our ability to progress the ball at times, whether we were going to be a little bit too samey. I felt, and this maybe this is a little bit of hindsight kicking in as well, but I think when you look at it again on paper, you could just see that it wasn't going to have the normal structure that a Scotland starting 11 under Steve Clarke would have. I felt like it was almost a little bit too aggressive for what we're maybe used to with Steve Clarke. Mm. But we'll obviously get to that in terms of going over the game. But yeah, that was my sort of key takeaways. I was surprised that McLean, Armstrong came in. Yeah, it was just a few. I know obviously they had 120 minutes, right? But yeah. I just thought it was quite a lot of changes for me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a lot of kind of detail complexity that goes into the choices. I mean, just generally, obviously, but particularly with the, as you said, the 120 minutes and 120 beers on Thursday night and then the prospect of the game on Wednesday as well. But yeah, for me, similarly to you, I guess goalkeeper was one that I was left a little bit perplexed at. I kind of feel that John McLaughlin has the right to be a little bit unhappy at both of his gaffers at the moment. Yep. But yeah, you know, fair enough. It's one game, and I guess he felt that Gordon deserved a cap given he, you know, kind of been called up for the trip. I felt that McBurney, look, he's the most kind of similar player to Lyndon Dykes, sort of. So I kind of understood the fact that he would be the starting striker. I was a wee bit unsure about McGinn and McLean as a midfield too. I'm always pretty sceptical about John McGinn as part of a midfield pair. And I just wasn't kind of sure about that, particularly with Armstrong ahead of them. You know, I was a wee bit, you know, unsure. And finally, I guess the obvious thing too would be with the three left-footed centre-backs, Cooper, yeah, McKenna and Considine. Not necessarily that I was particularly opposed to their selection. I was just kind of curious about where who would be and so on, and effectively who would be the right-sided centre-back and how that would work. But yeah, that was our thoughts about the lineup. Our Twitter timelines, I think you'd say, Gavin, were largely very positive at halftime in this match. And even, you know, after we failed to salvage a point, let alone get a victory, still pretty positive at full time. And I guess to kind of run with the feel from last Thursday and this kind of week overall, let's echo that positivity a little. So what or who were the good things about this game, in your view, for Scotland?
So I guess a fairly obvious one was Kieran Tierney down the left. I thought he had probably one of his best games for Scotland. I think the game, the way that both teams played, suited him. There was quite a lot of space for him to do his one-trick pony move. He was able to, you know, hit the ball past the Slovak fullback and then just drive forward into the space. I felt that the Slovakian midfield was a little bit unstructured, as was ours, so I felt that the space on the flanks was there for Tierney to attack. And he had a couple of nice moments, and yeah, I thought overall he was probably our best player. Struggling, I thought Liam Palmer was okay. There wasn't, for me, there, I guess I'm trying to remain positive, but it's hard to, when we've had so much positivity over the last sort of 3 or 4 days, it almost makes you feel a little bit sick to be this positive.
Okay. Well, I'll chime in with a few things, right? So I'd agree that Tierney had a good game. I think post-match, I maybe kind of said on Twitter that as much as he was fine, I kind of pointed out that I felt that he's going to maybe have to develop another move moving forward. And people fairly, I think, kind of pointed out to me that I was being a little bit unfair, kind of pointing out straight after the match when he had done very well. And I think that is, you know, that's fair. But like you say, it was a kind of game that suited him. A lot of space in the flanks, not a particularly quick or good fullback up against him. But look, you've just got to play what's ahead of you. And he did that. He did it well. Some good deliveries into the box. So well done to him. I thought he did good. I think that other kind of positives for me would be Ryan Christie.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the key things you're trying to do with this system for Scotland is force turnovers high up the park, you know, kind of harry people. And Christie's done brilliantly in both of the games, Serbia and this one, I think. There was lots of moments in this game where, he was maybe not the person that was on the end of a chance or even the person setting up the chance, but the chance probably doesn't come if not for him harassing people and winning the ball back and just causing a bit of panic. So I was impressed by him yet again. And I think that the other positives are in terms of chances at both ends. So I think it's fair to say that we made quite a lot of chances in this game in comparison to previous matches. You know, we really struggled to make opportunities from open play the last, you know, 5 games or so. This was different. We did make chances, obviously failed to take them, but it's always a positive to make chances. And the counter to that is that we didn't really concede many significant chances. Most of the chances that the Slovaks made were outside the box. So that's a positive too, right? Particularly with a kind of effectively second string backline. So those are kind of positive things for me. But I guess let's kind of move on to the fact that it's fair to say that you and I maybe didn't share the generally positive feeling about the match. I'm a known miserablist, so it was always like that. Satisfied, but you, Gavin, are we allowed to talk about lads? Maybe you're supposed to have played the game or gone to a special sort of school to be allowed to pass comment. But fuck it, what wasn't so good about this game from a Scottish perspective?
Quite a few things for me. So I felt like whilst we obviously created like a number of chances and we pressed aggressive, which is nice to see on the eye when it works, but there was a number of times where Slovakia beat our press really easily and bypassed the lines very quickly, and before you knew it, our defence was exposed. I think especially between the sort of spaces between Armstrong and McLean, they were really, really poor for me actually in terms of their ability to press the ball, and just positional awareness was something that I was concerned with. And I think we sort of spoke about this in the first half that it was something that we would had to adjust to, and we didn't really. And I guess for me, that was a major concern. I was also really concerned about Ollie McBurney. I think it's time that we've been fairly supportive of him, but there was a couple of times for me in this game where he took too many touches in the box, or he tried to set himself, you know, perfectly rather than instinctively. So I was just worried a little bit about his confidence. You know, is it almost like, are we just going to keep trying to play him to make it work? He's not,
sure.
He's not, for me, a sole striker. I think he has to play with someone very close to him. And whilst, obviously, Christie was, you know, very advanced and really energetic and tried to get in and around him, I think he actually does prefer playing with another striker opposed to a more advanced midfielder.
Sure. I agree with that. The thing I would also want to say about McBurnie, right, is that I guess with what you're saying about maybe it's a confidence thing with those kind of multiple touches in the box, I think that's like a kind of natural thing to say when maybe somebody's not scoring or is a bit under flak, but it's very hard to tell whether that is a confidence thing. I mean, he's just not a gunner, is he? Right? He's not a clinical kind of predatory striker. So maybe it's just that even if he was completely confident, it's just not there for him, that kind of, you know, kind of deadly thing. Maybe he does tend to take a couple of extra touches, and maybe then the point is that just continually to play him and give him those chances, you're maybe still not going to get the goal return that you would expect from making those chances for a striker normally. So yeah, I kind of agree with you on all that. Let's go back a wee second though for me. Just I like what you were saying about the kind of bypass of the pressing, and I really think that's a kind of important note for us to touch on, because I think that it's quite easy to, you know, kind of put the bad aspects to the side, or to think, you know, why are you kind of bringing these things up? Look, we've qualified for the Euros. We're still in a really good chance of going through the Nations League. But the point is that it's useful to think about what this system that we're clearly wanting to leave, to use moving forward opens you up to. Because for me, I think that this is quite a risky system in some ways. As much as there's some things about it that are effective, and obviously it led to some turnovers and making chances, there are things about playing, you know, a front three and effectively a central midfield pair that mean that a good team that knows what they want to do can pull you apart. And I actually think that the Slovaks had some really good, clear plans to do that. They did a couple of quite smart things. So Skriniar was really well equipped to step past the first line of the press, particularly if it was Armstrong, as you mentioned, or also McBurnie, who I think didn't press very well at times. He got bypassed a little bit.
Yep.
And then Skriniar could play a pass through the lines between McLean and McGinn. And that was also helped because generally, whichever one of McLean and McGinn was at the same side as the ball. So if the ball was with Skriniar, the left-sided centre-back, it would be McGinn who would step forward and join the press. And that made it really gappy in the midfield. They're not the best two as a midfield pair anyway, in my view. But that really made a huge amount of space. If you go back and watch, even in the first kind of 3 minutes of the game, the Slovaks do that twice, and there was a massive hole in the central midfield. But they're not very good up front. They didn't have, you know, kind of somebody that was really an option for them to make chances for when they got into the final third. The other thing that the Slovaks did, which I think was quite smart against our system, was sometimes they would move three players onto the wing when they had the ball deep. So, like, for instance, let's say it was on the right-hand side, right? So their right winger would pin our wing-back, Tierney, back. Their centre-back on the right-hand side would go quite deep on the flank to the kind of right-back area as an option for the goalie. So one of our front three would go and kind of cover and press him. But then in between the centre-back and the right winger, the full-back would be free on the touchline. So either our central midfielder, maybe Kenny McLean, has to go across the cover, leaving a big gap, or the wing-back, Tierney, has to push up to that guy, leaving the winger to the centre-back, maybe Cooper, or our press has to drop off. So I think that the Slovaks kind of played it quite nicely, and it didn't really come off for them in terms of once they bypass things, but with a more clinical team, I totally get that the point is that you kind of take that risk to an extent, and we try and get the turnovers that, you know, Christie or whoever else up front can make. But it worries me a little bit thinking about what another team could do. Anyway, any other things that you think weren't... I've got a couple other things that I'm not so positive about this match. Do you have any other ones you want to mention?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you one that's a fairly generic one, not match specific, but I was thinking about the makeup of the squad selection. And I was thinking a little bit like about what was the purpose in calling up Ollie Burke? What was the purpose in... calling up Callum Patterson, a couple of players, and you know what? I know that against was it the Czech Republic, Patterson came on and won throw-ins and corners in the last 10 minutes and wasted time. But to me, that's a waste of a call-up if that's the purpose of bringing someone into the squad. Ollie Burke doesn't particularly fit this system. I don't think he's got the... Whilst he has the raw energy and pace, I don't think he's smart enough or got the technique to be able to do the things that Christie and Fraser have done in that role. And that's the only position he could really play.
I guess what you would maybe say is that Clark might have wanted to give him a chance, if need be, in that kind of role to see it work, see how it works. And for Patterson, the versatility, you know, and also the fact that he's apparently a good, well-liked squad member, you know, kind of helps. I know that you might put those things a little bit lower down the list of priorities, but I don't know. I kind of feel in general, I'm okay with most of the squad selection at this point, but I do take your point. However, what I would say, if we're talking about Burke and so on and changes, it's kind of the second game in a row where, to me, Clark's substitutions haven't been very good.
Yeah.
So he waited a long time to make subs in this game, and it became a little confusing. He kind of eventually threw on three centre-forwards, right?
Yeah.
We had Shankland and McBurney and Griffiths all on the pitch at one time, which was very strange. He also switched to a back four at one point. I understand that, you know, obviously it's a positive generally to see a manager being proactive and think about how he can change things, but that change didn't work. It made us, you know, very open, and it just all seemed a little bit kind of like throwing things at it, rather than a coherent kind of idea of this is what we would do if we concede a goal, you know. We're going to pause just there to hear from some of the other Pure Football team members. I asked them to tell us how did they feel during the match on Thursday, and then specifically at the moment that Marshall saved the penalty that put us through, and also which player do they think will be key for us at the Euros?
I was weirdly comfortable during the match on Thursday. I think it was... The first half was good. We played really well, but then it did get to a point in the second half where I was starting to get a little bit nervy, I think. And obviously as the time went on and it was still just 1-0 and it was approaching full time, it was far too nervy for my liking. And then obviously those nerves were vindicated when Serbia got their goal. And I mean, at that moment you're just like, here we go again, this is going to happen, and Serbia could even go on and get a winner before full time. Luckily they didn't. Extra time was horrific, like obviously the worst we played for the whole match, and it was just, you're watching through your fingers most of the time. And it goes to penalties. And obviously, we're going in there with a 100% record in penalty shootouts, but you're still not confident. People like Ollie McBurney, who obviously came on and I didn't think he was good at all, Kenny McLean, they step up for their penalties. And again, you're watching through your fingers, but we did it. And the moment when Marshall saves a penalty, I think it's quite difficult to describe, to be honest, because it's been so long. And I think I was in shock more than anything else, rather than being delighted. It was a really weird feeling. I think that kind of carried on for the next few days as well, where it doesn't really sink in that much. And especially so, like Gavin and I spoke in, on Thursday night after the match on Twitch, and I don't think I was fully overjoyed as much as probably a lot of other people were, which was a really strange feeling. I think in terms of players that will be key for us at the Euros, it's got to be Ryan Christie. Obviously, he got the goal on Thursday night. You guys will have seen he played so well against Slovakia, even though we lost yesterday. I was really impressed with him. I think he has that ability to step up sometimes. But not just him, I think Van Dijk's. You see the difference at the moment when he's not in the team. And I said on Thursday night with Gavin that I'd like to see him play 90 minutes for us at some point, because I don't like it when he keeps getting taken off. And I think that's got to be one of the most important things going into the Euros next year is that he is the main man up front, because he just makes things happen for us.
And we're back to the Pure Football Podcast with Gavin Miller and Owen Brown. How about the, given you mentioned the kind of makeup of the squad, there's been quite a lot said about the number of left-footers in the squad. And I just wanted to get your thoughts about having the three left-footed players at centre-back. So, you know, we know that was partly driven by circumstances, as we touched on, you know, with the amount of time that people played on Thursday. But do you think it affected us a little bit? What were your views about that at all, Gavin?
Yeah, I think you definitely seen it. And I think that's what I was sort of trying to get at when it was a bit samey. I felt like they were all wanting to do the similar sort of things when they received the ball. And it's easier for Slovakia to adjust to that. I think Andy Considine, a lot's been made about him getting his call up and, you know, a lot of positives about that. But I felt like he was, what's the right way to describe it? I felt he was not best equipped to do that role. And I just felt that whilst obviously it's a nice story and stuff like this, I just feel like, you know, we've not really got time for nice stories and sentiment, especially for a 33-year-old.
Sure.
So that was
a little bit of a no, sir, you can't pass that goodie situation. Sorry, I can't boogie. I felt that having the three left-footed players at centre-back, it didn't affect us too badly out of possession. They didn't get dragged into the channels too badly. I felt that there was a wee bit of a risk when we didn't have the ball. If a centre-back pressed the ball recipient high up the park and got pulled out of position, and that happened to Constantine a fair bit, there was a bit of a hole behind him, and that's obviously quite dangerous with a great passer like Hamzik on the pitch. But luckily, Slovakia didn't really have anybody making pacey runs into the gap that was created. And maybe that was compounded not because of Considine, but maybe if you had, for instance, Ryan Jack in the game rather than McGinn on that right-sided central midfield, maybe Jack knows when to drop in cover. But in terms of on the ball, I felt that. And obviously, I don't want it to seem like I'm picking at Constantine. He had the difficult task of being the right-sided centre-back.
Yeah.
But he did slow things down with having to kind of adjust and generally wanting to pass with his inside foot. And you know, maybe it's partly due to footedness. Maybe it's just that he's not a great quick mover of his body. And also partly just McTominay's been pretty good at kind of breaking the lines from that position and so on. Anyway, it wasn't that great. And as I think you mentioned, for me, it was kind of compounded by the midfield too, neither of whom are really there for great passing ability. Those would maybe be the things that I guess you and I would both think could have been a little bit better. Putting the Nations League to the side for the moment and coming back to the Euros, given, you know, it's obviously a very exciting thing that we've qualified. Wanted to get your thoughts. Who do you think is in this current squad but won't or shouldn't make the tournament?
There's quite a few, actually, that I was thinking about. And I don't want to be too critical, but so for me, obviously, Craig Gordon shouldn't be in this squad. I don't see the value in having the 37-year-old keeper at this tournament when I think, you know, every time we speak about Scotland, I keep saying, what's the point in having your third choice keeper being someone that's so experienced, bringing someone that's younger to give them the experience, getting them around the camp? So for me, Craig Gordon's one. I wouldn't have Andy Considine, which will probably upset Twitter, but I wouldn't have Andy Considine in my squad. Probably wouldn't have Greg Taylor either, because I think that his minutes are going to completely deplete. So that worries me. Kenny McLean, Ollie Burke, and Callum Patterson. So that's six or seven players. I know Clark's going to be more... he's not going to be as ruthless as I am. And it's going to be a lot about the DNA of the squad and these sort of things. But I just think those are the players that I would be looking to replace if possible.
Okay. I mean, I think it's fair to consider these things, but I don't know, I guess.
He's not going to make that many changes, right? I'm completely aware of that. But
he's not, and also I think it's right not to, right? It's kind of exciting to think about change and how things can be improved, but I think we need to be calm. One of the positives of the current setup is the clear, close identity, the style of play, the players that are there to fit. And ideally, we want continuity, right? That club team feel, not much at all to change. But I guess I agree. That doesn't mean it should be a closed door, and there's a long time to go to the tournament. So, you know, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on things. But also, there's not that many international games probably before the tournament. I don't know. One to maybe come back to once a little bit more football's been played and we can see, you know, how people are getting on at their clubs. But let's think a little bit differently about Euro 2020 for a moment, if I can. So let's say that Euro 2020 goes ahead in its current format. So, you know, match in Glasgow and all the other kind of exciting stuff to look forward to. And let's say we also have a vaccine. And today we did get some news that there's another one that seems to be having some good results. So fingers crossed about all that. And let's say that, you know, fans can attend. We can have, you know, street parties, you know, George Square or whatever. But let's say you, Gavin, have got a, you know, our dream of something a little bit different at football games. You've got a food stall, right? A nice, fancy, one of those Aerostream, you know, shiny food trucks that you've set up outside Scotland's first match at the Euros at Hampden. What food are you selling at that stall? Give me some.
Oh, wow.
Scandalsliga, pure food.
Scandalsliga. I'll say I would go for some sort of Mexican type food. I think that's just a personal choice, and I think the purpose behind that is because you can't really go wrong with like fajitas, tacos, you know, chili, all these things. You could do a lot with that, quite simply. I maybe underestimated this question, but yeah, that would be mine. I think just a quick personal choice of smashing in a fajita. Maybe you could do something like a Scottish twist on it, have like, I know, like haggis, neeps and tatties type fajita.
That sounds disgusting.
It does, doesn't it? Maybe
haggis, neeps and tatties fajita. Wow. I think you need to be a guinea pig and try that one out and report back.
Have I just been relegated from the Scandalsliga?
I think you have, yeah. Whatever the second tier of that is looking for. You'll be in there with those gamins that post their disgusting dinners on Twitter. I've got an artisanal Scottish munchie box. So I think it's got to be deep fried. It's also got to be reflective of good Scottish produce, have a kind of multicultural feel for it. Also, we'll be hosting the Czech Republic and Croatia. And what I want is to leave their fans impressed, but also so full that they can't properly cheer on their teams. So I'm thinking chips two ways. So some chippy chips and also some salt and chili Chinese chips.
Oh, nice.
Maybe some haggis pakora. A mini pizza crunch, a wee Scottish seafood selection, so scallops and prawns deep fried. Yeah, all that in a kind of pizza box, that'll be ideal to weigh down the opposition fans, and we'll be able to roar our boys on to victory before they go and pump the English at Wembley as well. so that's that's the senior team chat for the moment, right? And obviously we're very much looking forward to Wednesday's game against who else but Israel for the umpteenth time when hopefully we'll secure our place at the top of the Nations League table and get promotion to the next level. But let's talk about another team, another Scotland team, the under-21s. And on Tuesday afternoon, so as I said, hopefully when you're listening to this podcast, the Scotland under-21s face Greece away in their final group match for Euro 2021 qualification. We're top of the table with a win in this match. We can qualify. I want to know, first of all, Gavin, you know, so the under-21s played Croatia last week on Thursday and ended in a 2-2 draw. Do you have any thoughts about that game, and are we going to do it against Greece?
So I guess for me, I can't say I've seen the full 90 of the under-21s, so you're probably best placed to answer that question.
Well, of course, I wasn't there this time. Unfortunately, I brought in somebody with a little bit more football and experience than me in the form of Darren Jackson to do co-commentary. But I think that the game against Croatia, it was a tough match for the under-21s. Lovro Majer was really good against us. They got two goals, went up 2-0 by half-time. Those two goals came initially kind of through our sort of left-hand side, their right-hand side. I really think that Tom McIntyre, who played left centre-back against Czech Republic, deserved to keep his place. We also had some kind of, I don't know, this for the not the first time, Gemmell kind of selected essentially four fullbacks on the flanks. So Nathan Patterson was right wing, Ross McCrory at right back, Patrick Redding left wing, and Daniel Harvey left fullback. At halftime, Patterson came off for Glenn Middleton, and I think that gave us a bit more skill and width and directness. We then had a little bit of a slightly fortunate bit of time. After 55 minutes, we scored, but it was a goalie error from a Middleton shot. And then they got somebody sent off, maybe kind of undeserved, didn't look like a red card to me. And that kind of turned the game, you know, the subs and so on. And then we got it back to two each. Again, Middleton was really good, adding a lot of kind of pace and directness and kind of really getting involved. Billy Gilmore gets sent off after being on the pitch for about 5 minutes after coming on as a sub. Really didn't understand why he gets sent off. He was involved in a challenge, but it didn't even look like a booking, let alone a red card. But he said something to the ref, maybe, you know, I don't know, ref reacted to that. But essentially, it was a game really of two halves. And I guess the players deserve credit for getting back, the resilience shown to get a two each. And I think they can maybe take some inspiration from that into the game against Greece, and also inspiration from the winning mentality shown by the senior team. And also we need to get revenge for the previous time they played against Greece. So we lost to them at home 1-0 almost a year ago, exactly, to a 90th minute penalty after a handball by Daniel Harvey, despite the fact that we kind of dominated the game again without making many real chances. But I think all those kind of ingredients, the fact that Greece are out of contention and that we can, you know, take heart from our kind of resilience and the mentality that a senior team have shown, I think we can do it.
Can I just quickly come on to one point that you mentioned there about Tom McIntyre losing his place? So Tom McIntyre lost his place because Ryan Porteous dropped back into the 21s from being in the senior squad. And this just sort of quickly ties into my point about succession planning. Ryan Porteous would have been a right-sided centre-back that we could have had. And albeit, yes, he doesn't play in a three at the back, but just for me, I just find that a little bit interesting that, you know, I know it was an important game, etc., but so was the national team, the senior team's game. So for me, I just wonder about things like this. I just wonder about what's the dynamic of that sort of conversation, and if,
sure,
you know, I don't know, just to me that's one that stands out, and I don't think I particularly love the way that the midfield plays under the Scott Gemmell team. It's all very samey in my opinion. So yeah, there's just a few, I guess that those are like more generic points, but I just wanted to quickly touch on that whilst I was thinking about that.
Yeah, I think there are things to consider. I mean, it's impossible to kind of know what the conversation is and what the decisions are, you know, caused by. But I guess you could wonder, you know, could Porteous have been in the senior group? While we're on that, I guess, why don't we talk about movement up? So is there anybody in the under 21 squad that you think has a particularly strong case to potentially be in the running for a spot in the senior Euro squad, you know, next summer, depending on how things play out over the next half a year?
So going by what I said, with seven players dropping out, they've all got a chance. But no, in terms of realistic chances, the people that I wanted to quickly touch on were Ross McCrory. Obviously, he was involved in the squad, the senior squad before, didn't quite make it. But then what I was thinking, his advantage is that he's someone that is right-footed, can play centre-back, can play a holding mid, can cover right-back. So at a tournament, that could probably be quite valuable to have someone that's versatile. And it's not like a Callum Patterson versatile where you're a centre-forward and you're a right-back. It's like you're versatile in the sort of right ways. So I was thinking that was probably the best shout for being called up.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Gavin. He certainly benefits from his versatility. And I guess the other thing he benefits from is that he's a likely certain starter for his club every week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he'll be playing. I guess in terms of his versatility, do you think he's a possible backup for the McTominay role?
Yeah, potentially. Potentially. I think, so,
you know, maybe has some of the same sort of qualities. Yeah. I'm not, you know, saying that I would ideally necessarily want that to happen. But I guess it's something to consider. I think on this subject, again, I'm probably not in a huge rush to shake things up too much, but I definitely think there are some people to consider. And I guess as we touched on with McCrory there, a lot depends on how much football they play between now and next summer, and also how they fit the system, and also how much football the current senior squad players play. So, I guess you maybe spoke about the fact that you're not sure whether you'd want Craig Gordon to be in the squad next summer. So I guess both Robbie McCrory and Ross Doohan might be possibilities. It seems unlikely to me for both of them, but you know, you never know what happens in terms of injuries and so on. And I guess we spoke about Ryan Porteous. I think he's got a reasonable chance. You know, if you want a right-footed centre-back, somebody in that is a pretty good passer, is likely to be playing every week for his club side. You know, Clark will have the opportunity to go and see him anytime he wants. You know, that's a possibility. I guess the other ones I was thinking about beyond that, so you mentioned that Ross McCrory could cover at right wing-back, which is true. I think that position is still somewhat open. Absolutely, you know, Stephen O'Donnell and Liam Palmer have both done okay recently, but I don't think you would say that one of them is 100% nailed on to be a starter, or that necessarily, depending on how things go over the next 7 months, they'll both definitely be in the squad. But out with McCrory, I'm not sure if there's anybody that would step up at the under-21s. Harrison Ashby at West Ham, who's just turned 19, has been playing right back for Scotland under 21s, but he's just got an injury that I think is likely to keep him out for the vast majority of the season. So unfortunately for him, I think that would be an unlikely thing. And Nathan Patterson, the other option at right back, is unlikely to get many minutes this season, I would imagine. You know, he's got the all-conquering machine of James Tavernier in front of him, but also I think that he's a vital backup, so is unlikely to get away on loan in January, I would imagine, unless Rangers happen to bring in another right-back or something. Next person to talk about, I guess, would be Billy Gilmore, right? He would be the one that you would say prior to injury, you know, if we'd been talking about this 5 months ago, you might have thought he would be the one with a chance. I guess what I would say, and I'd like your feelings on this, are two things. First of all, will he play very much between now and then? He's back from injury in terms of, you know, being fit and in training, but I'm pretty sceptical about him getting many chances at Chelsea, particularly given, well, there are other options, the system that they play at the moment, not necessarily having three in central midfield, and also just the fact he's been out of the picture and you know, maybe a little bit forgotten about. I'm also unsure whether he would be given the chance, though, to go away on loan in January, so soon after having an injury, and whether he would want to take that chance, or if he wants to just kind of, you know, re-embed himself at the club. The other thing maybe to get your thoughts on would be, does he need to show that he can play in the sort of midfield two that we have, you know, first? You know, I think it would be, he's obviously got the quality, the technical ability, but it's a big responsibility. Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think you've pretty much nailed it there. I am worried about his ability to get minutes in the Chelsea team. I think that's going to be a major issue. I think he's going to have to perform at an extremely high level to get back in that side. You know, Jorginho's on the bench for Chelsea. He can't get back into the team. So I think that's one that's going to be a challenge in the first place. I think you're right to say it's unlikely he goes on loan. And if the thing I was thinking about Gilmore as well, if you're going to go on loan, I feel like you have to go to a very specific team. You can't just be going to anyone. It needs to be a proper ball playing type team. Otherwise, he's just going to get lost.
Came to my Partick Thistle team in Football Manager 20 in the Championship, and he did very, very well. So, you know. No, I'm not saying that he should be coming to the Scottish Championship. That would be lovely, but I do agree with you that, you know, the right team, the right setup. You know, it's particularly always difficult in terms of doing that when you go on loan, right? But particularly for a player like him, and particularly given the, you know, fact he's been injured, that's kind of important. Let's talk about two players who maybe have a bit more chance of definitely getting some football between now and next summer. So Lewis Ferguson and Alan Campbell, can I mention them together? Because they're both, you know, got stacks of experience, will be key players for their clubs. What do you think? Do you think they are possibilities to go to the Euros?
Only if there's serious injuries. I don't particularly see either of those players being called up to this squad.
Yeah. I think, you know, their experience under 21 level means that they would be a reliable last spot in the squad, like, you know, 23rd player if there's a very late injury to a midfielder opens up a spot. But it seems unlikely to me, you know, as I've touched on, I think Clark is going to want, you know, kind of experienced, dependable people, particularly in that central midfield. So, yeah, I think it might be a little bit of a waiting game for them, right?
Yeah, I don't see either of them doing it. No.
How about David Turnbull?
So he's actually the player that I think has got probably the next best chance of being in the team. The reason being is I think when you look at how he's playing for Celtic, he really is doing such a good job on the ball. He's creating a lot. I think he's one of the best in the league for, you know, creating passes through the lines. And I think for Scotland, that's something that could be really important at a tournament. Whilst he has his deficiencies from a defensive perspective, I think that he could be someone that could be quite a nice addition. He can play in a few different positions. He can play as a 10, as an 8, can play as an inside forward. Not that we particularly play with inside forwards, but just that, again, that versatility. He probably still needs people to drop out in terms of injuries and these sort of things, but I think he would be the next person that I would look to call up just based on his actual ability on the ball. I think he's able to do a lot. Okay. So, yeah, that would be one.
I really like Turnbull. He's somebody I would, you know, be open to. I think maybe if you're looking at this as a kind of 3-4-1-2 setup where McGinn is the one, I could see him maybe being like the third choice for that kind of McGinn role. Yeah. So maybe if there are injuries. I guess my concerns here are twofold. Firstly, will he have played enough football?
Yeah.
It's quite possible, you know, he doesn't get much of a chance at Celtic. And also, I just have a little bit of scepticism about the stats there. So by no means am I saying he's not capable of those kind of things or can't deliver, you know, positive numbers. I just wonder if the sort of numbers we're seeing at the moment are very much related to small sample size and game state. You know, the obviously not having played many minutes, but also quite often maybe coming on as a sub when Celtic are maybe chasing the game or playing against a team that are sitting deep, and maybe he's just getting more chance to play those types of passes than maybe, you know, other players are. So I just, you know, a wait and see maybe from me, both in terms of how his performance is looking this season, but also whether, but I agree with you that in terms of somebody a bit different that would still fit into the system, he's a good shout. What about Fraser Hornby for you?
No.
Okay. I don't see it either. You want to give me some detail as to why?
So I don't think he's better than any of the players that would be ahead of him. I would have Kevin Nisbet in the squad over Fraser Hornby if that space became available. I don't see him getting ahead of Shankland or McBurney, Dykes, Griffiths. I just don't see that happening for him.
Sure. I don't see it either. I think the first issue for Hornby is he's unlikely to play enough club football, at least based on how things are going at Reims at the moment for him. I also think that you do tend to see quite a lot of shouts on Twitter and that for him to be kind of promoted. But I think maybe those are people that don't have the context of, you know, having watched the games, the under 21 games. I think he's done very well. And obviously it's great to score goals against any team always, but a lot of his goals have been maybe in kind of games that are against the lesser lights, and I think other things are built into that. So maybe people think that because he's tall, it'll be a similar type of player to Dykes. I'm not really sure I would say that really. And also maybe people think, well, if he's similar to Dykes, the other guy that is most similar to Dykes is McBurney, and I don't like McBurney, so let's just try and get Hornby in because, you know, the unknown is better than the guy like McBurney who's not done very well, and I don't think that's a good approach to things. So for me, I don't think that Hornby is ready. I think that for that kind of specific role, like an analogue to Dykes, he could maybe be third or fourth choice for that role, but overall, like you said, he's probably about, what, seventh choice, maybe, generally. You would be factoring in probably trying people like Kevin Nisbet beforehand and so on.
Can I give you one wild card?
I've got a wild card. Is it going to be the same guy?
Go ahead. Mikey Johnston.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the one, right, I think, that there's a possibility for. You talk me through why he's your wild card.
So I think Johnston, I could see him doing the Fraser role.
Yep.
I think he could do that pretty well. I think he's got the technical ability. I think he's got the work rate, the effort. I think he's got really smart positional sense. He can drift from side to side, picks up nice sort of, you know, nice sort of areas in the half spaces. I think he's someone that could be, if he's able to get back playing regularly, could be someone that could be a nice addition to the squad. I would definitely have him over Ollie Burke if he was fit and playing.
Okay, this has become the get rid of Ollie Burke show slightly unfairly. You're going to get anybody in, some guy that hasn't played football for about 6 months and hasn't been a senior international cap, I'll get him in. But yeah, I kind of, as I said, I had Johnston down as a wild card too. And obviously a lot hinges on how his return from injury goes and how the remainder of the season goes at Celtic and whether he, you know, can get in the team for substantial minutes. But yeah, I think he could be an interesting one just to add pace, directness, something a little bit different to Scotland. I think that, he could maybe also even play that kind of Fraser role. It's a lot of work, you know, the Fraser or Christie role. So I think we'd need to be sure that Johnston had the ability to make smart passes in the way that they do, you know, press and so on. But yeah, he's one that I would be thinking about, absolutely. We'll hear now from Byron Hutchison with his quick thoughts about Thursday night's victory over Serbia.
I think, weirdly, I felt quite nervous but also quite content for the first 45 minutes. I think by the time the game came around, everyone was more than aware that Serbia were quite a poor team despite having a collection of good individuals. And I felt really quite reassured after the first 45 minutes. Obviously elated when we scored, but that's when the nerves started to kick in for me. Quite intensely, and the longer it went at 1-0, the more it kind of ramped up for me, and it was quite evident, I think, probably in the Pure Football WhatsApp group chat that as we approached the last 10-15 minutes that I was panicking a bit, worrying about changes we could make, changes we should make, to try and hold on to it, as it became kind of apparent that we were settling in for to try and hold on to a 1-0 despite it being fairly open, or there being avenues for us to maybe score a second. When they scored, it wasn't anger or anything, it was just complete deflation. I just kind of slumped back in my chair. And then as we went through extra time, I was honestly just kind of out of it, expecting them to score. Again, in the same position I was in when they scored, slumped in my chair. And then really weirdly, when it got to penalties, I had a surge of confidence. And then when every player that stepped up, I kind of, normally my reaction would be, please don't miss, please don't miss, please don't miss. But for some reason, when they were stepping up, I was like, go on, mate, bury it, put it in the corner, do whatever. And then when it came to the final penalty, the Mitrovic one, I think I'm not alone in thinking or having thought at the time, like, this could, he could miss this. If anyone's going to miss it, it's going to be Mitrovic. And I was saying aloud, I have no one to back me up on this, but I was saying aloud to at the time, Marsh, dive left for some reason. And when he did, it wasn't even, like, there's obviously videos on Twitter and everyone going around out in the streets and celebrating and screaming. For me, it was just relief. It wasn't even, I let out a roar and a clap, but it was, I just kind of let out a big breath and thought, thank fuck.
Welcome back to the Pure Football Podcast. That's the podcast that brings you in-depth insight into football from the local park to the World Cup. I'm Owen Brown and I'm with my co-host Gavin Miller. Let's move on from that kind of discussion of who might step up and let's talk even younger about a different type of step up. So the Scotland under-19s would have been playing their qualification group now in France. But COVID-19 meant that was cancelled, so they're not going to the Euros. The authorities have cancelled the qualifying groups and automatically put some teams through, not Scotland. Pretty unfair. But if the under-21s don't make it to Euro 2021, which of course will be decided this Tuesday, I think there's going to be a kind of, you know, obviously a refresh of the cycle. Is there anybody in particular you're looking forward to at all being a mainstay of the next under-21s group? So the current under-21s are the guys born 1998 or younger. The next group will be the guys born 2000 or younger. Anybody you're looking forward to seeing in that kind of new cycle, Gavin?
Yeah, I think Stuart McKinstry at Leeds is definitely one that's an interesting prospect. I think he's had a really good start since joining there from Motherwell. So he's definitely a player that I'll be keen to see. And obviously, these guys are still really young, right? So there's a lot that has to happen. But I would be interested to see how he gets on. I think in the midfield in specific, that's probably where there's going to be the biggest turnover. I also wouldn't be opposed to seeing Josh Doig and Josh Reid jump up the ladder pretty quickly, just because I think they're both playing senior football, and whilst they're both raw still, I think that, again, you know, Daniel Harvey's, what, 22, Patrick Redden, 21, Nathan Patterson probably holds down his spot, but I feel like there's probably a gap at the fullback position for maybe Josh Reid. I think he's probably the slightly better of the two right now for me, but
You're forgetting about Aaron Hickey.
Yeah, I've totally forgot about Aaron Hickey, that's right.
Well, he's one of the ones that I'm looking forward to. So these are most of the guys that we would expect to be in the next group will be the people aged between the 2000 born date and the 2002 born age group. And I think this group have been really unfortunate with the impact of COVID on their international chances. There's been, you know, cancellations of games and things like that, and obviously the qualification group that I mentioned there. But I guess what that maybe also can mean as a sort of positive is that it throws things kind of wide open. You know, it maybe means that there'll be people that maybe haven't been involved much can maybe get a chance, and you can maybe stake a claim just with a good performance. So that's kind of interesting. I think there will still be some people that have been involved that can still be involved and might be. So guys like Glenn Middleton, James Scott, Lewis Mayo, even younger ones that have stepped up recently, like Harrison Ashby, who's played at right back, and then some younger guys who've been involved in squads, like Kai Kennedy, Lewis Fiorini.
Yep.
I would expect those people maybe to kind of be in the squad. But in terms of people that haven't been in the under-21s yet, really, really looking forward to Aaron Hickey. So he was named in the squad, but had to drop out due to injury, I believe. But it's good to see that he's kind of back in the fold and he's been considered for selection. He's open to selection. I think that he will be a really good addition to the team. He'll be really good at left back for that team. I think he'll help in terms of maybe the chance creation, the passing from deeper areas that we've maybe not had up till this point. You know, his passing is, in my view, maybe his very best attribute. Other people that I think can help with that, so Scott Banks, who's at Crystal Palace. Worryingly has been linked with a move to play for Wales recently. I think he has a Welsh granny. We need to get in and ahead of that because he looks very promising. He scored some spectacular goals for Crystal Palace under-23s in the Premier League too. And I think the other thing that's interesting in this group is it's kind of wide open for a centre-forward to come through.
Yeah.
So Fraser Hornby is going to be out of the picture. James Scott can still be playing at this age level, but he's not necessarily somebody that's, you know, an exact number nine.
Yeah.
And I think still there can be competition and challenge there. So in terms of the centre-forwards, I think it's just wide open. There's a lot of guys who maybe aren't necessarily playing senior football, but could maybe get, you know, an opportunity to do so soon. So I'm thinking Dapo Mabud of Rangers, Connor McBride, who's at Blackburn, is doing really well for youth teams there. Kyle Joseph, Jack Stretton at Derby, Kieran Bowie at Fulham, even Ewan Urain at Athletic Club in Spain. He would be young enough as well. So I think that's a position to watch. Anything else you want to add on to people that might be stepping up there, Gavin, or is that kind of enough on the future prospects?
I think it would be quite cool to see Kieran Bowie step up, just considering obviously we both absolutely liked him for quite a while, so I think it would be nice to see that happen.
Yeah, he was involved in the under-19s recently when they had that kind of called off mini tournament with England after COVID-19 results, which was a real shame for him. And obviously he's young enough that he can still factor in for the under-19s. But yeah, I think there's some spots open, particularly given, you know, we've been effectively playing fullbacks in the flanks recently, and he's somebody that can play across the front line, you know, can be a threat from wide areas too and offer something a bit different. So that would be one I would like to see. I guess finally, you got a score prediction against Greece for me?
I'm going to say 1-0 Scotland.
Okay, great. I'm going to say a 2-1 win for Scotland. And of course, both of those results would put us through to Euro 2021 for the under-21s. If we do go through, the tournament split into two parts. So there's a group stage in late March, and then there's a knockout stage in early June. But all those games are in the host countries of Hungary and Slovenia, who already take up two of the 16 places. It'll all be on Sky Sports, as far as I know, but tomorrow's game versus Greece is on Premier Sports, and that's a 4 o'clock kickoff for those that can watch it. So we said that the next kind of thing we would do would be to take things back domestically and talk about some players that we're excited to watch in the return to club football. I guess just very briefly before that, I wanted to ask you just, how do you feel about the international breaks generally, Gavin?
Yeah, I don't mind them. Not completely opposed to them. I think it's obviously been impacted with COVID, but I quite like that they still had the Betfred Cup games on, and we still see, you know, teams like Hibs playing. I think, you know, I don't believe that games should be called off if you've got one or two players away on international duty.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been quite happy with it. What about you?
Fair enough. I don't know. I get a feeling that lots of club fans don't really care for international breaks, international football much at the moment, especially in the UK. I don't know. I feel that that's a wee bit selfish. Obviously, I kind of respect anybody's opinion about these things, but I'm not too sure if people are really coming from the perspective of, you know, thinking about the player's welfare or whatever. It's more that people are just kind of bored. And you know, I find that a wee bit frustrating. I think that, you know, this idea that we should be completely always focused on our own teams, our own kind of interests, is a little bit of a pity. And particularly if people are kind of thinking that, oh, the football's not elite football, you know, it's not good enough. I think that, you know, I don't think, you know, international football obviously is not the standard, perhaps, in comparative terms to what it used to be. But it's certainly not like a different lesser sport. You know, if you maybe compare it to the latter stages of the Champions League, obviously it's not going to be as exciting and tactical and smart as that. But I think there's a lot to enjoy from it. I think particularly last Thursday in Scotland's victory and other things that we've seen recently for other countries when they've had remarkable results means that there's a lot of value to it. And I don't know. The main thing that frustrates me about it is just the kind of slightly self-centred things you see sometimes where people are more concerned about one of their players for their fantasy football team getting injured rather than, you know, caring about the player getting injured or even being a player for their own team. It's just about the impact it'll have for their internet points or whatever it is you get for playing fantasy football. So anyway, that's my feelings on international break. But let's bring it back to club football because we are looking forward to that. As you said, there's been some League One and League Two action and Betfred Cup, but the Premiership is back. So are there any specific players, maybe start me with one and then I'll do one, that you're particularly looking forward to watching once we're back to Scottish Premiership football this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to... So obviously recently we've covered the lower levels quite a lot, so I'm going to stick with the lower end of the table first and build my way up. I'm going to tell you, one player that I've been really excited about is Hakeem Odoffin from Hamilton. I think there's not a lot of bright spots in this Hamilton team this year, but the performances of Odoffin as a centre-back has just been excellent. I think he's very competitive, he's very aggressive, he does a lot of things really well, reads the game pretty well, still has an opportunity to develop in terms of his contribution on the ball, but I think he's someone from a defensive point of view to start with. He does all the things really well, and yeah, he's one of the, you know, the better defenders in the league for interceptions. He's aggressive at pressing the ball when it comes into his zones. And actually, one of the things that I do really like about him is this Hamilton team lacks quality, I think, in the central areas the most. So Dolphin does try and step forward with the ball, does try and, you know, take a little bit of responsibility to try and make something happen, which I think, you know, when you're playing for a team like Hamilton, it's quite commendable. So he's absolutely a player that I'm looking forward to seeing, and someone that I think in a better team could actually kick on a bit even more. But I would definitely say keep an eye on Hakeem Odoffin. He's got a few goals from set pieces as well, so definitely a player to watch for me.
Okay, great. Hakeem, the dream. right, I've got one for you. Ryan Hedges at Aberdeen. So Yeah, first thing I wanted to ask you about it was, though, how many Ryans do you think there are in the Scottish Premiership?
Just give me
a quick guess.
Ryan Jack, Ryan Porteous, Ryan Fulton. I'm going to say 9.
Yes, you're correct. Yes. Well done. 9 Ryans. So Ryan Hedges has really taken people, including me, by surprise. Most shocking thing about him has been your positivity about his hairdo, but in addition to that, he scored 2 goals in the Premiership, right? And he's got I think 2.89 XG from open play, so you know, even more than the goals he scored. It's meaning that he's got 0.29 non-penalty XG per 90, so he's a real threat in front of goal, particularly given, you know, he's not a centre forward. He's also got 0.16 XG per open play attempt, so he's getting good chances when he does get chances, and he's also making chances for his teammates. So 0.16 open play expected assists per 90, so making a decent amount of chances for teammates, and he's got 2 assists as a result of that. That's pretty much bang in line with expectations. But in addition to the kind of statty stuff, it's also the energy and direct running he adds, both on and off the ball. He's mobile, he's versatile.
Yep.
He gets the ball into dangerous areas through carrying the ball and passing and being available for teammates. And I think he really suits the system that Aberdeen have got at the moment, and really adds something different for them. And I think he's even impressed in games like the game against Celtic in the league, you know, even kind of against bigger teams, he's done well. So, yeah, I've been really impressed by him. Have you liked what you've seen from him too?
Yeah, I thought he was excellent in the game against Celtic. I think the goal that he scored, where he covered pretty much the full pitch just to get into blocks, I think that really stood out for me. I think that he's someone that's really came onto a game and is definitely someone that I think, you know, going into the main season again, it will be really interesting to see how he does.
Absolutely. And Aberdeen have got Rangers at the weekend, so it'll be, you know, given he performed so well against Celtic, be good to see how he does against, you know, a defence that have obviously been very good, and a midfield that have been good this season. Let's move on to your second choice, Gavin. Who have you got for me?
Yep, so we're climbing up the table and we're going to Livingston and Julian Serrano, who's on loan from Monaco. I think, again, Livingston have had a bit of a up and down season, but Serrano is someone for me that's been quite impressive. Again, like O'Dolphin, he's got some really interesting defensive numbers, competes for a lot, he's physical, wins quite a lot of his aerial duels, which is obviously something that's you know, an important stat in Scottish football. He's
particularly for fullbacks, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. But on a serious note, I think he reads the game really well. I think he's the 83rd percentile for interceptions for fullbacks. So I think that tells you a lot about his performance when you compare against some of the other fullbacks in the league. But for me, the important thing for Livingston and Serrano is his contribution when it comes to creating chances for Livingston. He's just someone that I think he's involved in the goal build-up. He's someone that, you know, makes good decisions when he receives the ball, whether to carry the ball forward or whether to pass it. He's just someone that I think is quite an intelligent footballer. And you're not going to be, I know it's a bit of a cliche, these sort of things, but you're not going to be playing for Monaco if you're not at least a semi-decent standard. So I think we're seeing that from Serrano. And I actually think he's someone that could probably go on, again, a slightly higher level. I'm not sure what that is, but there's a lot to like about him. He's, again, very active, presses the ball, puts in effort, ticks the box. And I think that what I'd like to see is Livingston maybe fix some of their other issues across the team, and you might get even more out of Serrano.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Brilliant goal against Celtic as well, right? A kind of long distance strike, very instinctive but kind of composed as well. I like it. Definitely agree he's been a good player this season. My next player is somebody who has previously been a left back but has now been played in central midfield, which is his kind of preferred role. So that's Ethan Erhon. So Erhon's 19 years old. He's been a favourite of mine for a couple of years now. Plays at St Mirren. But last year, he kind of struggled to get into the team. He had a loan move down south that was essentially to play reserve football. But he's in the team this season, and he's playing, like I said, in his preferred role of central midfield. He started the last 6 Premiership matches in a row and played 80 or more minutes in all of them. So he's kind of becoming a key player for St Mirren. He caught some attention, I guess similarly to Serrano, for a stunning strike he scored against Aberdeen. But I think he deserves praise really for other aspects of his game. So his forward passing is good. He's really good at making interceptions. And while he's not a particularly physical or aggressive player, I think he's pretty good at tackling and picking up the ball. I think that what I would say is that he's somebody, when you look at him statistically, you maybe need to really consider the context of who he plays for. And I mean that in both ways, both that you don't kind of overrate things he does, but also that you kind of give him a level of understanding. For example, he's just not going to get in the box or anywhere near as much a chance to create chances as, say, a midfielder at, like, I don't know, Hibs or Aberdeen. But on the flip side, you know, maybe his pressing numbers in terms of quantity will be quite high. And even if you adjust his tackle numbers for possession, they'll still look high. And I wouldn't want people to think he's some sort of, you know, ball-winning machine all over the pitch. So you kind of have to, you know, build in a bit of an understanding about St Mirren. And we've spoken before about St Mirren and their kind of conservative nature at times. Is it almost a fear to move the ball forward quickly? And certainly his time in the team has been a tough time for the club. So they drew 0-0 with Dundee United in his last league match, but they lost the 5 in a row before that he started. But I think that between him and the likes of Cammy McPherson ahead of him, the pace of Dylan Connolly, there's maybe some ways for them to change this. And what I'd really love it is if Erhon maybe exerted himself a little bit more to make that happen. So a little bit more of his personality in the pitch in terms of not deferring to other people and not handing off the ball to other more senior players. He should be trying to make things happen, trusting in his passing ability a little bit more, not being afraid to rotate his position and be the guy that's kind of played the ball and then look to carry it a bit, thread people through, exchange 1-2s, make things happen. And I think he really does have the ability to do that. And if he does those things, he's somebody, just to kind of step back to the previous section, that could maybe force his way into Scotland under-21 contention. He's got appearances for the under-17s and under-19s. But yeah, he's somebody that I'm looking forward to seeing over the next few weeks in the Premiership. You got a third player for me, Gavin?
Yeah, yep. We're climbing up the quality table here. It's Odson Edward from Celtic.
Okay.
The reason I wanted to speak about Edward is I feel like there's a bit of a narrative about him that seems to be that he's just not as good as he was last season. I think that's not necessarily true. I think that's, whilst there's elements of that is accurate, I think it's, I feel like he's maybe not a scapegoat, but it just seems to be that there's just, like I said, this narrative about Edward and his contribution, as though it's not quite the same as it was last year. And I think when you look at the underlying numbers, there's still a lot of positives about what Edward's doing. And obviously, he's probably had a bit more minutes off the bench than starts this year. So obviously, it's inflated slightly based on that ratio. But there's, when you compare his performances to last year, he's doing a lot of the same things. So he's still having, you know, high XG chances. He's still carrying the ball forward, still picking it up in you know, wider areas, dribbling the ball. In fact, he's actually dribbling the ball more than he was last season, with more success. His expected assists are really similar. I think if you put his last season's performance radar against this season's, there's not a huge amount of difference. Some of it's more positive. Some of it's obviously got that element which he could improve upon again. But I just wonder if Edward... So Edward's a 2022 contract for Celtic. I just wonder if Celtic really need to make their mind up on what they're going to do with him, because I feel like the way that things are going just now, his value is depreciating. But I would like to see Celtic getting Edward back into the starting lineup as the number one player. I think they've maybe suffered from trying to be too have too much depth in forward areas. I think spending $5 million on Ajeti when you had Kamala, Griffiths and Edward in the fold already was just, it was a bit of a shot in the foot, in my opinion, just in terms of how that's going to work out long term. But yeah, Edward is someone that I think people are maybe sleeping on. I think he could come back and have a real positive impact for Celtic going into the next part of the campaign.
Okay, definitely agree that it's one to watch, right? There'll be, I don't know, it's the Hibs game away on Saturday, which is a big, big first game back for Celtic, so it'll be exciting to see how he does in that. I'm going to go even higher up the table, and of course that takes us to Rangers. The player that I'm looking forward to watching when football comes back for Rangers is Joe Aribo. So I absolutely love Joe Aribo. I'll say it now that I think that the next sale that's not a centre-forward out of Scotland in excess of £15 million could well be Joe Aribo. I think that he poses a different type of challenge for opponents than maybe you'd tend to see in Scotland. So he's slightly unorthodox. He's very brave. He's got a direct ability to get the ball closer to goal. And I think he's really starting to show that again this season after having, you know, been out with an injury. He's got limited minutes, of course, but statistically speaking, in the Premiership this season, he's got 0.34 non-penalty XG and 0.32 expected assists per 90, both, you know, fantastic numbers. He's got over 5 successful dribbles every single match. He's making about 5 touches in the penalty box every match, which is really high. I think that moving forward for Rangers, there'll be some interesting choices for Gerrard in terms of his midfield three and how brave or conservative he is depending on the opponent. They've got quite a lot of good squad depth generally and even in midfield now. So there's a couple that are maybe kind of between the central midfield and 10 spot. But, you know, you've got Davies, Jack, Kamara, Zungu, Arfield, Aribo, and all have their strengths. And there'll be plenty of opportunities for each of them, I'd imagine, in rotation. But I kind of have a feeling that Aribo, who has started the last 3 league games in a row, will quite soon make himself seem indispensable for Rangers. I think he's a really unique, kind of high-quality player. I think he's very effective versus the sort of low blocks that Rangers often face. But I also think it'd be quite interesting to see how he'll do in Europe against a different type of opponent. So Rangers have got Benfica on, I think, the 26th of this month. So, you know, less than 2 weeks away, and that's kind of a group decider. So it'll be interesting to see if he plays in that kind of game. But yeah, he's maybe the player in the whole of the league that I'm most excited about watching a little bit more of soon. What about you, Gavin? Any thoughts on Aribo? Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. I think he's a lot of what Rangers need at times. I think he gets lots of good balls into the final third, into the penalty box, these sort of things at times from a penetration point of view that Rangers were maybe lacking. So I think, you know, having Aribo in the sort of number 8 space and allowing him to be creative from deeper areas is definitely something that Rangers will benefit from. I think when you know you're going to have predominantly more of the ball, Aribo in the 8, especially at home against the lesser teams, is going to be beneficial. But also, like you mentioned, in Europe, his ability to relieve pressure by successfully carrying the ball forward, by making smart passes, all these sort of things, you know, show that Joe Aribo is trending in the right way.
Absolutely. Lovely to have my opinion validated. It is the reason why we do the podcast, after all. So that kind of brings us to the end of things today. I guess it just remains to say we kind of are fingers crossed, toes crossed, very hopeful for Scotland under-21s on Tuesday and then for Scotland senior men's team on Wednesday. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do express that in the form of liking it on social media, leaving a review, subscribing, telling friends, family, colleagues, people on the street about the show. Gavin, anything you want to leave the listeners with before we go?
No, just echo everything that you've said. And if you like what you've heard, then just be sure to check out our back catalogue, as there's some good things on there too.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Steve, you've done it, Steve. You've got Scotland into Europe, Steve. You did it with Big McTamney, Wee Rido, and Big Andy, Steve. You've done the nation proud, Steve. And for that, Steve, we thank you.